Welcome to Share the Bytes, episode 14. You had me at SSH. Welcome, everybody, to another podcast here at DV Lug. I'm Ian.
Good to see you, Ian. This is Grant.
Hey, good to see you, Grant. And we have two wonderful guests with us tonight.
Glad to have you.
Yep. We have Michael and Kim.
That's right.
So thank you for coming.
Sure. Glad to be here.
So let me start off with, what brings you here? The promise of free food?
The invitation to podcast SSH hadn't been here in quite a while. I think it's time to stop in at DV Lug again. Also, I was kind of mentioning DV Lug to Kim a little bit. It's like, you haven't been to DV Lug, have you? Yeah, you might want to check it out.
Fantastic. So, you are something of an expert in SSH, Michael?
Relative expert. I've certainly been using it a long time, do quite a bit with it. I guess I might be sort of a go-to person in many of the environments I work, including the current one for SSH information and configuration and debugging and stuff like that. So, relative expert, yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm very excited to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Me too, yeah. I know you've given this talk before, so we'll have a private version for us.
I've done a different format, done slides and presentation. I was actually looking at the slides I had on it a little early and basically done more or less presentation on SSH, I think four times before. So
you've done a talk both on SSH itself and also best practices, is that correct?
I think I've done one, I've sort of often added sort of the SSH best practice into it. I've also done other things on security and many other topics, so there's certainly some overlaps there depending what one is covering.
Oh, fantastic. So, for our audience who is just joining us and is getting introduced to Linux, networking, everything like that, why don't we start off with just a small description? You don't have to go into detail, but can you tell us a little bit about what is SSH? I mean, for one, it stands for Secure Shell. Is that
exactly. It stands for Secure Shell. Basically, with SSH, it's essentially a secure replacement for RSH, telnet, things of that nature that would do communications and log into a system remotely that were not secure. So some of the original impetus to develop SSH was, at the time, people were using a lot of stuff that was not secured, and people like stole passwords off the network, and then somebody said, yeah, we should do this secured. So that's basically how the first SSH got going.
So, I mean, before SSH, was it just regular telnet?
Telnet, RSH. Those are the most common before SSH.
And the differentiator is really the word secure to that, right?
Well, in terms of naming, it's the word secure. But in terms of protocol, basically, in almost all circumstances, SSH is going to be secure in its communication and across the network. I think the only exception is that on that is if you do change some compile options and say, yes, I want to enable like the null encryption protocol, which does like no encryption, and you force it to do that.
Thank you.
Food is arriving.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, I know you can't see this, but food has arrived, and it looks absolutely delicious.
I did not know soup came with my food, so that's a bonus.
Cafe La Scala here in Walnut Creek, they always have wonderful food and desserts, so you got to watch out for those. So I've had too many coming here over the years.
Yeah, I typically eat either the pizza or the roasted chicken salad. Those are my two favorites.
Roasted chicken salad sounds pretty good. Yeah, I got the Greek salad. I've had it before. It's pretty good here. So.
Well, said, well, as we discussed, we'll also let you eat, but we're going.
This is a first.
Yeah, yes. So,
it's a salad. I don't worry about it getting cold. So.
Good point.
If anything, it ages well, right?
Yes.
So, with Secure Shell, it's connecting from one computer to another. Very simple layman's term,
that's
but over a encrypted
thing
channel?
For starters, yes. Okay. So, it basically does the communication encrypted. So, in the most basic form, you do like SSH and the name of the host or IP address. It sets up a secure communication channel on that. You would log in by default using password authentication, just if you were logging in locally. And then you have your secure connection. So that's the very most basic usage of it. Also in that particular case, if you've not connected to that particular host before, it will interactively prompt you, and also because it will give you basically essentially a fingerprint of the host you're connecting to. Reason for that is it wants you to confirm the fingerprint so that you in fact acknowledge, say, yeah, that's the host I want to connect to. The reason it does that is to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks. So basically, if you accidentally connected to some other host or somebody coerced and got you connected to something else, it doesn't have the secret key of that host, so it wouldn't be able to generate that same fingerprint identification through your client.
Oh, very interesting.
So that's another part of the security.
So you just basically mentioned, if I get this correctly, two ways of establishing a connection with SSH. Two that I'm familiar with is, again, something that a lot of people are familiar with, just a username and password.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just a login user.
Yeah. Yep. But starting up with the standard shell, usually Bash on Linux or some other variant of the Warren shell, the original.
And then the more secure way that you've mentioned is a shared key.
Yeah. So it's not really shared key per se, but it works using public key infrastructure. So basically there is a private key and a public key. What you do to log in using a key is typically would generate a key. There's also in the SSH software, the program called SSH KeyGen, so SSH-KeyGen, you can use that to generate a key. So typically syntax would be SSH KeyGen space minus T space RSA, and then typically you give it a bit size, so space minus B space like 2048. Enter, and it will by default put it in the appropriate default location. You basically get two files, one with a public key, one with a private key.
Okay.
So the private key you keep nice and secure, you don't share that. Also, it will prompt you to set a passphrase or password on the private key.
So and this private key stays on your local machine that you're logged
into? Yes, on the client side.
Okay.
So in general, you should put a password or passphrase on that private key. The reason you do that is if you don't, then your private key is sitting in the clear. So for example, you know, backups, anything else that reads that data off the file system, it's got access to your private key. So if you get, you know, if you give it a password or passphrase when you're creating the private key, it goes there encrypted to that passphrase or password, and it's never written in the clear on disk, which is a good thing.
And that's part of the whole best practices.
Yes, yes, yeah.
You mentioned verifying the host key.
Yes.
So if one has never logged into this particular host before and doesn't have access to that host, how do you verify that the fingerprint that they've given you is actually authentic?
Good question. Unfortunately, most people don't bother to do that when they really should. There are ways to set that up and set that up better, but most environments I've seen so far typically don't do that. So ideally, the user should never really get prompted for that, because if the sysadministrator or administrators have set up appropriate infrastructure, that wouldn't happen. So say you're in a small to medium-sized business or a very well contained and organized large corporate environment with a nice effective security department and system administration and so on and so forth, they can basically get that information out to all the client systems first. So basically when you go to log into the host, it already knows what the appropriate key of the target host is, so it won't ask you. You can even configure the clients to basically reject a key rather than ask you if it doesn't know about the key. So that's even safer in those cases. Unfortunately, most people don't do that. But then again, a lot of the environments, especially on the initial connect and stuff like that, it's not exactly highly probable one is going to be man-in-the-middle attacked on the very first go at the host. So a lot of people say, whatever.
And so, I know it's some other...
But even with SSH to help, you know, let you know if something does go on or change. So if it goes to that same host again later and the key has changed, not only would it warn you on that, but in most cases, by default, it basically is not going to let you connect until you adjust that information. So basically, cache is the key information. And if then you decide it's okay, I want to drop the old key and use a new one, you can do that. But most of the time, a host key would not change. But some environments, sometimes that happens. So if people have a lot of dynamic hosts that get ripped down and rebuilt or stuff like that, sometimes the key will change, but most of the time it does not change. In general, if you run into a case where the keys change, you usually should have some good idea of why the key may have changed, or ask your sysadmin, hey, what the hell is going on here? Why did this key change?
You described a great IT environment that is the target.
Yes.
And then hopefully, you know, people can get close to that.
Right. There are also ways of having the keys published in DNS. So if you do that in DNS, and especially if you also do it using DNSSEC, that's another way to basically have the public key, or the host public key information out there, and also to potentially put it out there securely, so that can reduce possible avenues of attack from
that
the
goes
middle.
Into a resource record on the DNS server.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
So anyway, so SSH is the most basic stuff. Yeah, you can do essentially login. And you can set up private keys. In a lot of ways, SSH and some of the similar commands are sort of modeled after the old R command. So some of the functionality in them is very, very similar. So you can do things like not only just log into the host interactively, but you can also give a command. So it basically logs into the host and runs that command, and that's it. So often that's very handy. So if you just want to get one particular piece of data or information off of the host, you can do that. If you have your keys set up, you can do something where you can have, you know, like a script or something where you do dozens or hundreds of hosts and gather a whole bunch of information off of them all fairly quickly. The other thing I'll mention along with keys, and again, best practices, you know, of course, typing a passphrase every time you use a key, if you got to protect it with a passphrase, it's not very convenient. So most people don't do that. Well, there's a wonderful way of dealing with that, and pretty darn securely, SSH agent. So what you do with SSH agent, you run that typically with the eval statement. So like eval and then command substitution SSH agent. You might give it some optional arguments like a default timeout. What that does is sets up a running daemon, and if you do it with the eval, it sets some stuff in the environment, including the PID and the socket to communicate with the daemon. Then you can use the command SSH add, and you can basically add keys to the agent. So basically, you use SSH add, you type your passphrase, then the clear text of the private key goes in the agent, so that is in memory and RAM, so it's not on disk, so that way you can access and use it. And so, well, wait a minute, but it's in clear and RAM. It's like, well, yeah, pretty much everything sooner or later is going to be in clear and RAM, so it's not really any additional risk there.
Just make sure you shut your laptop lid and put it into sleep mode before somebody grabs it.
And you could do something like that. So, yeah, you can also do the command like SSH add space minus capital D, and that will tell the agent to get rid of all the secret keys it knows about. So you can do that. You can also set the timeout. So, typically a lot of work environments I'll set up with a... When I fire it up, I'll do like a minus T space 8H, which basically says, yeah, only hang on to these things for 8 hours. And if I have need or reason to dump them sooner, I'll do that. Sometimes I do things for short minutes, you know, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, because I don't need the key longer than that. Because the other thing with SSH and the key and the authentication and login, only needs that when you do establish that connection and login. It doesn't need it again after that. So if you're going to remain on that same connection for hours, but you only need to connect at the beginning, you don't need your key hanging out in memory for hours. Hey, I give it 2 or 5 minutes, set up my connections, drop the key, I'm good, as long as I hold those connections. But drop them, okay, I'm going to need the key again. But in the meantime, I don't.
Well, I mean, that's all well and good once the keys are established on each of the remote boxes. But you've got to get them there in the first place.
Yes. You do have to get them there. There are various ways of doing that. I mean, you can always write a script or do something, put them out there manually. Again, since you can pass commands to SSH and have it execute those, you can actually pass appropriate stuff on a command to basically, you know, put your public key out there. Because what you push out on these servers is your public key, not the private key. And you do that. The other thing is when you do a key rather than a password, it's more secure. Mm-hmm. One of the key reasons, if you pardon the more or less pun there, it is more secure. Let's say you've got an environment where you got a bunch of users have access to, I don't know, maybe 200 hosts each, and they're all this big pool of hosts, and maybe you've got 10 or 20 admins. And you might think, in theory, it'd be nice if they had really good secure passwords and every single password on every single host was different, but 200 of them, they're not going to do that. They're going to have a small number of passwords, maybe only one password on all of them. Well, okay, let's take two different scenarios. So let's say you've got an admin, and they got privileged access on one of these hosts, okay? So let's say they log in over SSH to use a password, but let's say that the host they log into has been compromised, but they don't know that. Okay, they log in there, host's been compromised, they use password authentication, now that host has their password. What do you think that host might be able to get into now that they got that person's password? They got privileged access. They might not have a different password on every host. Let's see. Okay, not a good scenario. Let's take a slightly different scenario. Let's say they come in with a key. What happens in the case of a key, on the server side, all it has is a public key. What it does is basically takes a random piece of data, encrypts it using the public key, uses that as a challenge to the client, says, hey, in order to prove to me that you're authenticated to use this, you need to basically use your secret key to decrypt that and give me that string back, and then it says, oh, okay, they match. We can go on through our next steps.
So from a high level, it sounds like your fingerprint is the machine, and you have your public and private key.
So somebody basically goes in there, so say your admin goes into this machine that's been compromised using a key instead of a password. What has that machine got gained now? Well, okay, it knows the login name it came from, his IP address it came from, and already had the public key anyway, don't have the secret key. It's like, okay, I can see what the person's doing, but I haven't got the person's password. So I can't like break into all these other machines that have the same password. So it's one of the significant advantages of using key versus password.
Very cool. Yeah. So now you've learned all this over a number of years, I'm sure.
Yes.
And a lot of trial and error.
Some of that too, certainly. Yes. Yep.
What would you recommend like new system administrators start with? I mean, if they need to learn this or learn best practices, is there any place where they can go? Or I mean, is it as simple as just reading the man page at the terminal?
Man page isn't a bad place to start, but there's a lot of detail there, so it's easy to get lost in it. I don't know that I've looked recently, but I think there's probably some how-to guides or stuff like that. They're probably good places for getting started. Wikipedia's got a pretty good article on SSH. Not really so much a how-to, but fairly good in sort of introduction, background, some advantages, disadvantages, stuff like that. So it's also a good place. I should probably come up with and maybe send out a list later, but the slides I've done before have some resources and good introduction information on that too. Those are probably places to start. Man page is pretty good, but again, rather detailed.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. We really appreciated this.
Yeah.
And thank you, Kim, for joining us, too.
Of course, of course.
Glad to have you.
I was going to say also, you know, in addition to SSH, you know, some of the common commands along with that, there's SCP, relatively analogous to RCP for copying files. And there's also SFTP, which has an interface relatively similar to FTP.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to get you here again to talk about those. But until then, we will talk to everybody later. We're here at DV Lug at Cafe La Scala in Walnut Creek. And you can find more information at
dvlug.org.
Yep, and sharethebytes.com. So again, thank you everybody for joining, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, man.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.